Okay, no thoughts. And we end with Matt Pollard at Burgundy News reporting Cole Bassett is likely to be recalled to the Rapids.
Everybody totally thinks you doodle.
You're terrible. I'm still one. I love it.
Tony lad,
let's go salmon again.
Who paid for the nachos?
Nor rain, nor wind, nor snow classico.
Boarding the High Line with Rabbi in red. Talking the Rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Happy Turkey Week and USMNT World Cup anxiety, Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and I have not embezzled millions of dollars to buy an apartment in New York City for my cat. It is Monday, November 21st, 2022, and we are coming to you just hours after the United States opening 1-1 draw with Wales in Group B. FIFA World Cup has kicked off and all of the controversies are taking place on and off the pitch. If only we could have foreseen this. The Rapids finally have a front shirt sponsor and the prodigal son of Littleton, Colorado has returned to the front rage for now, question mark. I'm joined now by a man who does not think LeBron James would be on this World Cup squad had he chosen soccer over basketball, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
I couldn't recognize, like, anybody in that tweet. I mean, that's how out of the culture I am. But I couldn't. It was an amazing. If you didn't catch it, that reference is fantastic, Matthew. You painted a Rembrandt right there. That was really a winner. But if you didn't see the tweet, ESPN.
It was SportsCenter.
SportsCenter tweeted, "What if our best athletes played soccer?" Which they like. I think they literally meant it. I don't think they referenced basically the long running USMNT Twitter joke, which is like, you know, folks like me and Matt and the soccer Twitterati very strongly think that the "what if our best athletes played soccer" is like so comically Neanderthal that it's effectively like a meme. It's like a milk duck
milk toast, you know, spark. It's the
no milk duck, milk duck,
there's, milk
there's,
duck.
There's another, there's a meme out there which is Topanga's husband is a milkshake duck. That's the meat.
Oh, okay. Like, I know milkshake duck.
Milkshake duck.
Okay,
it's
yes.
A milkshake duck. Yeah. So it's basically the "what if our best athletes played soccer" is like a milkshake duck level meme. For those of you who don't catch that reference, you're going to have to now Google two things at once. So, all right. Anyways.
But to that point, Mark, just to give my, I don't know that we've formally discussed this, but so a few quick things that I have to say about this. One, like the someone tweeting that is that like, tell me you're a casual. I watch the USMNT at World Cups and at no other time without telling me you casually watch the USMNT and only during the World Cup. And the second thing that I have to say is just the absurdity of it, where I've seen these lineups and the shortest person, at least in, I'll say recent memory, I wasn't on Twitter enough in 2010 to know what that starting 11 that they had usually, but I'll say 2014 and then through to now, most of those lineups have included Steph Curry, point guard or shooting guard for the Golden State Warriors in the NBA. He plays basketball, for those of you who are listening to us but are not Nuggets fans and aware of Steph Curry. And he's usually, Mark, the shortest person that you have in that lineup. Steph Curry is 6'3". The tallest non-goalkeeper at the 2014 World Cup was Jerome Boateng at 6'3". I don't understand. You know, the NBA and the NFL completely understandably have emphasized height and strength, i.e. muscle mass buildup, over the course of the last several decades, and those just simply do not translate to soccer. LeBron James is, what, 6'7", 6'8", probably 250 pounds? If that was a viable body shape and human being for soccer, I think we would see more guys who are 6'8" and not scrawny goalkeepers or Axel Schuberg on first-team rosters in MLS, in Europe, or at the World Cup as well. Where I do think there's an accurate point to be made there, Mark, in that we're capable of producing world-class athletes that are capable of dominating their sport in the Olympics when it's international competition. The NBA is still overwhelmingly un-American. League, and then even some of the other international sports that we have. You know, baseball, I think, has had very good prominence in South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and Asia, obviously. Basketball is now an international sport. You know, hockey, you could argue the Canadians invented it, and they just piggybacked off of us in terms of being close from a population to have a proper league growth and standpoint. But still, like, if you were to bet, put, you know, together the best possible USA lineup, that would stack up against most other nations in baseball. We dominate in basketball, obviously, and we're still very competitive in hockey, albeit we usually lose to Canada or sometimes Russia. And so I think where there's a productive conversation out of somebody tweeting something ignorantly about that, and then just having the piss taken out of them by soccer Twitter, is what if we put in the amount of resources into soccer like we do for basketball in terms of how ubiquitous basketball courts are, like we do with football, like we do with other sports. Hockey, I would say less so, though it's mostly regionalized to areas where that's a little bit more popular. But, you know, Mark, you as a kid, who, as someone who's worked in youth soccer, as someone who's had a kid come up through the ranks and everything, you know how fraught it is and how much of a closed, gatekeeping, expensive barrier to entry there is. And so if we did that a little bit better in the same way we do with other sports, one would think, based on our population, our proclivity for sports and everything, that that would be a viable path towards producing world-class players that would actually be the LeBron James of soccer, though not necessarily LeBron James just switching from basketball to soccer. But
I mean, I'll just add, I think the thing that I'm trying to lean away from, which is really difficult right now, is that the dialogue about soccer gets ginned up every 4 or 8 years when Americans start paying attention to it. And it's really interesting. But I think, you know, Matt and I have fallen for the trap, and we won't for the rest of the podcast, so don't worry, folks. But that, like, they're like, I think we watch angry USMNT Twitter get angry because they've just watched a soccer game for the first time in several years. Whereas, like, you, our dear listeners, are benighted, brilliant, educated, highbrow, intellectual, soccer-minded soccer listeners, podcast listeners, you know better. Like, you listen to, consume, and think about soccer on a higher level, and so you're not going to fall for the trap, right? You're going to think about the real kind of moderate pros and cons of the USMNT match against Wales. You're going to watch all these other games. You're going to see formations. You're going to see tactics. You'll see the quality of individual players. You'll kind of see a new player and say, ooh, who is that guy? What league does he play in? And kind of like get new avenues. And new stars will be born, and new goats will be made, and new scapegoats will be made. And that's the fun of the World Cup, that we all get to scream and shout about it in a big way for the next couple weeks. You know, and I think the thing that, Matt, you said in your rundown at the very beginning that I got excited about and then we immediately ejected from our brain holes is this is a great week. Tomorrow's my day off. I have Tuesdays off because I have a weird schedule because I'm a rabbi, and I have the whole day off. I am pretty much planning on waking up at 5:15 in the morning to catch at least most of Argentina versus Saudi Arabia. I'm kind of leaving it up to, you know, my brain to see whether it wants to get up at 5 or not, but and then I'm going to sit my butt in a chair and try to probably order delivery at some point and just watch soccer games until my eyeballs bleed. And it's the most wonderful time of the year, people. It's just fantastic. It's way better than getting a pumpkin spice latte or a wreath-scented pine cone or a pine cone-scented wreath or whatever cinnamon-flavored, you know, Christmas wreaths and boo bobbles are going around these days. Like, this is the best week.
Absolutely, Mark. So let's get into it, Rabbi. Earlier today, United States 1, Wales 1, Timothy Weah scoring in the 36th minute in a transition from set up by Christian Pulisic for the assist, and then the 82nd minute goal from Wales came via Gareth Bale via a penalty that he drew off of Walker Zimmerman. Really a tale of two halves, the U.S. dominating possession, pinning Wales into their own half. They weren't able to do anything in transition. Gareth Bale was in Tim Ream's pocket, Mark. for the better part of the first half, but the U.S. again had trouble breaking down a low block. And while they got the ball into good areas, while they got people into good positions into the box, lumping crosses in from Christian Pulisic that barely get by the first man most times was not a recipe for success. And I think, unsurprisingly, the one sequence you had where Wales actually was like, oh, we got the ball back? Oh, we got transition? Oh, we can play in transition? Oh, crap, we've given the ball away. Oh, crap, Christian Pulisic has it, and Tim has got one man to beat, they end up scoring. And then you look into the second half where I think for the U.S., the intensity dropped a little bit. Wales raised their game. Kiefer Moore, obviously a massive addition for them coming off the bench. Mark, I feel like I'm the one of the two of us to speak objectively about the wide players for Wales, as they are Dan James and Harry Wilson, two current Fulham players, and then Nico Williams, former Fulham, now current Nottingham Forest player as well, in that Dan James did not do anything. Kiefer Moore did many good things, and the U.S. did not match them in intensity. I did not like how late it took Berhalter to make substitutions. I think he could have changed some things to have them deal with that a little bit better. MMA as a midfield was, I think, dead by the 65th minute, understandably with McKennie coming off as he's still nursing a bit of an injury. And even when the U.S. was able to get in transition, just the decision-making did not happen, or it was too slow, or the execution just was not there. Aaronson was great defensively. Aaronson was great in terms of his pressing. He had two really good chances in the box that were show of his energy, but anytime he got on the ball, he was a chicken with his head cut off. He was emblematic of his and the collective Leeds team that we have seen so far this season. But fundamentally, Mark, I think this game, once again, as it often can in World Cups, comes down to individuals. Great moment for Christian Pulisic, great moment for Timothy Weah, horrible moment for Walker Zimmerman giving up the penalty. Absolutely a pen for me. Yes, he gets the ball, but he goes through Bale in order to get to it. I think it was a completely unnecessary foul. Kellen Acosta, with probably the yellow card of the tournament so far, prevented Gareth Bale from potentially shooting at midfield with Matt Turner completely out of the box for a goal that I think we'd see on loop for 100 years in the history of the World Cup. And Mark, I don't know if you've seen some of the quotes that have come out of the pressers from the media that are obviously there. Some possible discontent, or at the very least, Gio Reyna saying that he's fit and he's available, and him not playing, and him saying that Greg Berhalter doesn't need to explain that to him or to anybody else, and Berhalter saying that he wasn't sure about playing Reyna because he didn't think that he was fit. Rabbi, I've said so many things. Your thoughts?
I mean, you had a million great thoughts, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. I just want to highlight two things of the way I saw the game. The beautiful thing about soccer, Matt, is two people can watch the same game and have very different takes, or equal takes that are not, they overlap in the Venn diagram, but they're not repetitive, right? So I think the thing that I liked the most about the first half that we didn't really achieve in the second half was we saw a lot of width in the first half, where the U.S. men's national team put two, sometimes three, even four players wide down the sides, combining, and maybe, you know, force Wales to kind of like draw to the sidelines, stretching their midfield out, and then we'd hold a guy on the far side of the field to keep them honest, and then have one player kind of in the middle, like Tyler Adams would be there, or Yunus Musa would be there, and then if we could make a quick, clever 1-2, then that player in the middle would sometimes be open, right? And I saw a lot of that in the first half, where we really pulled Wales apart in ways that opened up the field that allowed us to maintain possession and penetrate. I really enjoyed that. In the second half, Wales did a better job of possessing the ball and not getting drawn to the sidelines by the U.S., and that meant that that tactic didn't work as well. The other thing that I saw a lot of that I really commend the U.S. team on was that quick in transition play. They've always, under Greg Berhalter, there have been these like lightning fast passes that were, you know, on the ground really hard, and a player receiving it like had to make a really fantastic touch just to like gain any control of it. But it was always kind of like a rodeo clown, you know, like a bucking bronco. Like the USMNT through this entire cycle has played very strong, like whipping in big passes, like movement, like chaos. There was a lot of energy in the first 30 minutes of the game. But it always felt like they were like barely able to maintain possession on those crazy passes. There was just so much intensity and people running to the ball and like crashing through things. And it was just like everything's pell mell, helter skelter. But it never feels controlled, right? The team that I was thinking of as I was watching this game and most of the qualifying cycle was how much different this generally looks from like Manchester City, right? Manchester City whips in these precision passes between the lines that find the foot of the player and they settle it perfectly and continue on their way. And the USMNT never looks like that. The pass is always 10% harder hit and the reception is always like 20% less controlled. So there's always like a bobble and some chaos and then they've got to recover and like jam with it. But like all the guys, they're incredibly physical, incredibly athletic, and they turn it and they move it. Like it always feels like they're barely containing it. And then someone goes into a chaotic tackle and they like, you know, sombrero them or like, you know, whip it around. And then they make a kind of a last minute emergency pass. Like it always feels like just barely under control. And there was a lot of that in the first half that like led to some excitement. But in the second half, a lot of that just wasn't controlled. And it just kind of was chaotic. That's going to work against Iran because Iran's not going to make the play and we're going to score on them a couple times. I don't think that's going to work very well against England on Friday. We'll get to England later on, but like, you know, there's a lot of athleticism and high intensity. There's a lot of aggressiveness with this team. But there's definitely like, there's moments, especially in the second half, where the plan kind of falls apart and it's unclear what we're doing, because the thing that I said we were doing in the first half of like stringing them out and doing, you know, 1-2s and 1-2-3s on the wings. Like once that was taken away, it was, you know, switch the field on a long diagonal. It was, you know, hold out for a set piece, and it wasn't as dynamic and it wasn't as fun.
All well said there, Mark. I'm not expecting much from the England game. I still think overall it's I think it got showed pretty easily in the game earlier today, Mark. England 6, Iran 2, that Iran probably is going to lose all three of their games. So this game, I think, so this ultimately comes down to, can one team get a shock result against England? And if not, what happens between the collective goal difference between how well you can blow out Iran and then how well you can not blow out, get blown out by, or limit the damage from England? And I think the,
or work a draw. If you can work a draw against England, you're probably through.
Yes. And so I think that ultimately comes down to, do I like the US's collective ability to play in transition when they know they're in an underdog moment and can rise to the occasion, or do I like Gareth Bale in general more? And based on the one thing that I've thought about, Mark, I can't remember who I said this to or if I wrote this somewhere, but I feel like the longer the tournament goes on, Gareth Bale is going to work himself in, but he's not fit. He clearly showed that with LAFC. He played 5 minutes in the entire month of October for MLS Cup and everything. I don't think Gareth Bale can go 270 minutes in this one. And so I don't know what version of Gareth Bale is going to have any gas in the tank by the time you get to the England game. And so if he doesn't have anything, I don't see how Wales score in that. And so that has to be a loss. So that's where you almost think draw and then we're in. And then I'd have to think that the U.S. is going to be able to better deal with Iran and then actually scoring against them, because they have danger elsewhere, where, again, just pretty much so much of what Wales does is center focused around get the ball to Gareth Bale and then what does Gareth Bale do with the ball. And I don't think, even with Christian Pulisic on the field, if Tim Weah is not on the field and if Gio Reyna are not on the field, I don't see how the U.S. is as dependent on Pulisic in that situation as Wales is with Bale, regardless of who else is on the field. So I still like their chances to advance. Obviously, it's a disappointing result, and I can understand the frustrations. I think a lot of their issues are very easily fixable. That being said, I think they're going up against, at worst, the fourth best team in this tournament, and they're probably going to lose on Friday, but what do I know?
Yeah, last thing I'll say is just, you know, the play that everybody's talking about, except for the people who don't know anything about soccer. Well, not don't know anything, but I'm being a little bit harsh, but is, you know, there was the moment where Matt Turner came out to head the ball at like way outside of the box, and then which was a crazy sweeper keeper move, but kind of worked. But he only headed the ball to Gareth Bale, and then he couldn't scramble back into his own goal. And then former Colorado Rapid Kellen Acosta saves the day by yanking him down. I mean, you said it in the rundown of talking about if he had scored from that, if he had shot that ball from there, that's the kind of replay you'd see along with the Maradona Hand of God goal from 86 on a replay for the rest of our lives. But it didn't, because Acosta made a nice play. But the other thing I wanted to say was in the penalty kick, you know, Matt Turner dove the right way. He got a hand to the ball. But demonstrating the quality of Gareth Bale and how good soccer players are at this level, right? When I watch an MLS game and I see a guy take a PK and he hits it to the right side, but the goalkeeper gets there, usually the goalkeeper saves that. Gareth Bale got so much damn mustard behind that hot dog. He hit it so freaking hard. He would have put a hole in Matt Turner had he hit Turner in the sternum, right? He would have just ripped him in two, right? Like Mortal Kombat style, you know? Like, that was just absolutely the hardest hit soccer ball I can remember seeing in my entire life. It was just atomic how hard he hit that ball. And it was just something to behold. And for a guy who watches MLS, which is a good league, but not necessarily the best league in the world, to see a guy hit a ball that hard and put it in on frame, kind of epic.
All right, Mark, let's move on. Since last we podcasted, a lot of Rapids press releases have been posted.
So many press releases.
We'll start in chronological order. First of all, we got the news on the club's year-end roster decisions. This included finding out, confirming some players that were on contracts already for 2023, and then which team options they chose to exercise and not exercise. So first of all, the contract options that the Rapids picked up were for Diego Rubio, Michael Barrios, Ali Larraz, Abubakar Keita, Anthony Markanich, and goalkeeper Abraham Rodriguez. The club ultimately chose to decline options for Philip Mayaka, the Generation Unidos player, Michael Edwards, and then Steven Betisher. Clint Irwin is out of contract. Giassi Zardes is out of contract. The club remains in discussions with Zardes, Felipe Gutierrez, whose loan has expired from his club down in South America, Betisher, who I just mentioned, and then Edwards. Presumably, Mark, Clint Irwin is eligible for and heading for free agency. He wasn't going to play next year. I think it's best for him to go somewhere where he's at least going to have some opportunity. And I think this provides an opportunity for Abrod to move further into the first team rather than just being with Rapids 2. And so the roster as it stands right now are as follows. There are 22 players under contract. Lalo Sabubakar, Brian Acosta, Max, Sebastian Anderson, Barrios, Galvan, Keita, Larraz, Lewis, Markanich, Nicholson, Price, Prizo, Rodriguez, Rosenberry, Rubio, Torre, Viasia, Warner, Wilson, Yapi, and Yarbrough. So, Mark, I think the decisions that were made on bringing the players back who were brought back, I think were pretty self-explanatory. I imagine the situation with Steven Betisher is maybe the club thinking, you know, hey, if we could save 25K, I don't think anybody else is going to want you. And then maybe there was also, he was on the last year of his deal. So maybe he's thinking, hey, I've played really well. I'm okay with being in a Drew Moore situation in 2024 if you want to keep having me, rather than just picking up the option, can we negotiate a more reasonable valuation, but then also add on maybe a team option for next year? I'm a little confused about Mike Edwards because I thought he was really good for Rapids too, and he was great in the playoffs for switchbacks as well. Mark, your thoughts on any of all of this, but specifically about Mike Edwards and then ultimately the departure of Generation Adidas bust, Philip Mayaka?
Yeah, there's no doubt that both Mayaka and ironically, his Clemson teammate, Kamarni Smith, who played for DC United, they both got released. And rarely have I seen two integral players for an NCAA championship team who flatlined so hard in Major League Soccer simultaneously, you know, the same year. I think maybe water finds its level in the sense that Mayaka and Smith need to hone their skills at the USL level. But something I put on Twitter the other day was, based on Mayaka's lack of form this last year, I would guess, and based on my experience watching a lot of USL, Mayaka's got one chance at redemption. He's to quote Eminem, sorta. He's got to go down to a USL team. He's got to get signed up, get penciled into the starting lineup, play regularly, and play pretty well, or he's done. I mean, that's the interesting thing about these players at the very back end of MLS rosters. I think some people think that these guys will just drop down a level and be fine. A lot of these guys drop down a level, and they're not good enough at the USL level because they've been, you know, gathering dust in Major League Soccer, and they go down to USL, and they think that they're really great and that they're going to be fine. And USL is a really tough league. It is very similar to the drop from Premiership to Championship or Championship to League One, and that, like, they're very physical. People are really, you know, dog-eat-dog trying to get through each other to the next league. So that's my take on Mayaka. The other sense about basically all the players who are unsigned or kind of like out of contract with the team is negotiating, there's a certain amount, I think, every year, and I don't know that I spend a lot of time thinking about this in the past years, of, listen, we've only got 20 slots on the senior roster. We need to clear out 15 of them. We need to clear out 5 spots or 6 spots or 7 spots, so that if we want to upgrade, if we want to go abroad, if we want to bring in a couple of really exciting, talented players or make some trades, that we have room for those guys. To some degree, that means that there's always some guys on the Rapids roster, like Steven Betashore, maybe like Jossie Zardes, and maybe even Michael Edwards, who are kind of like held at arm's length, which is basically like, we're not, you know, getting rid of you. We're just saying, like, you know, maybe we'll bring in some other guys, and if there's still room on this roster, you could come along too, right? So there might be a little bit of that. Clint Irwin is not that. You said that very well, Matt, which is Clint Irwin is always kind of a backup goalkeeper, who's happy to be a backup goalkeeper, who maybe if the team thinks that they can, you know, do better like Abe Rodriguez, maybe they will. So that's an interesting question. There's definitely a lot of pieces left aside, which leave some questions about what the team wants to do in the coming year. I was interested to see that Michael Barrios seems to be coming back. You know, I think that in what capacity, I don't know. He had a very interesting role this year as kind of like a flex player, right? He started about half the games and came on as a sub in about half the games. The question for a 31-year-old Michael Barrios is that going to continue? And another question for Michael Barrios is, what are we going to sign him? What's his contract going to be next year? Did he get extended? They bought his option?
Yeah, he just had a team option for this year, Mark.
Which implies that he's going to stay on at the price that he was at roughly last year, which was $680,000, which is a lot of money. So I guess, you know, that solves that problem. But that's an interesting move also, because it says that this team really does value Michael Barrios, because that's not cheap. You know, he's one of the more expensive players on the roster. So we'll see. And we'll see what they do with Jossie Zardes. I feel like maybe they want to negotiate him down a little bit and use him as a super sub, ideally. Or maybe they really think that he's, you know, part of the plan for the next coming year, because he spells Diego Rubio, and he allows Diego Rubio to roam in pockets or twin with him in a nice way. I don't know. It's interesting to see. We've got a lot of unanswered questions.
All good points there, Mark. Just a few things that I want to bring up. The club, as I mentioned earlier, is discussing, or at least has some interest in, retaining Felipe Gutierrez. Obviously, that would require a transfer fee or potentially another loan from Universidad Católica. I think a lot of whether or not that's happening, Mark, is depending upon other moving pieces that the Rapids have in the midfield. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. I'd be open to them bringing him back, but I don't think he should be the first option. And certainly I wouldn't pay more than $500,000 in allocation money in a transfer fee to him, to Católica, just because of his age, to be honest. The Rapids team will obviously have that option to buy Lucas Estevez for reportedly $1 million USD with a 50% sell-on clause. They need to exercise that by December 1st. So, Mark, I don't think we're going to be hearing about any of that this week, but certainly maybe next week. And then I agree with you. I haven't heard – there's not a big market for Giassi's artists in the way that there was for Corey Burke, who obviously went to New York Red Bulls today or yesterday. I can't remember when that was made official, Rabbi. So I don't know that there's not a big market for Zardes, and I think he probably knows that, I think he knows that he'd be wanted here with the Rapids, but he'd probably have to take a pay cut. I think I've said this multiple times on the pod. I would be open to bringing him back at the amount that they're paying Diego Rubio, Jack Price, Michael Barrios, anywhere within 100K of any of those guys. I think I would be totally fine with that. I don't know if there's anybody in the league coming at him for, $1 million a year and a super long contract. And there's definitely not anybody that's coming at him for what the $1.4 million that he was paid, according to the MLS Players Association last year. Let's move on, Rabbi. The MLS expansion draft came and went. Colorado Rapids protected a bunch of players. They left a few players unprotected, and ultimately no Rapids player was taken in that. Mark, I'll be honest, I completely forgot about it. I was in the midst of cooking dinner. Stuff took a little bit longer that night. And I was like, oh, crap, what did I miss? Did something happen? And I looked at the list that St. Louis picked up. And other than the guy from FC Cincinnati, I'm like, I've never heard of these players. Are they any good? Oh, wait, they're trading some for allocation money? Oh, they're pulling a Charlotte. They're pulling an FC Cincinnati. They're pulling an Austin. They're pulling a Miami. Okay, I'm done here. So no Rapids player was taken, Mark. We don't need to talk about what this means from a St. Louis standpoint. We are not a St. Louis City podcast. But here's the list of players who were ultimately left unprotected. Clint Irwin, I think, is redundant from what we mentioned earlier. Defenders, Betisher, Estevez, Markanich, Drew Moore, who's retired, and Danny Wilson. Midfielders, Gutierrez, Mayaka, Colin Warner. One of those is not coming back with the Rapids. One of them, St. Louis would have to negotiate another fee. If you want Colin Warner, you can have Colin Warner. And the only forward was Giassi Zardes. Based on my understanding of the roster rules and regulations, Mark, the only thing that would really happen there is there's a clause in the CBA that the team that a MLS free agent played most recently for can negotiate a higher contract percentage raise compared to their last salary than any other team, realistically. So it's effectively the MLS equivalent of the bird rights for the NBA fans listening. So there was really no point in selecting him. But so, Mark, we talked about this a little bit of is there a little game theory that Porrick Smith would have gone with in terms of leaving players protected or unprotected? Did you see any of that? Were you upset by any certain players being protected or unprotected? And also, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Estevez and Wilson being left unprotected were both game theory, which was, and I think you called, Matt, if I'm not mistaken, when we previewed this a couple months ago, you thought Lucas Estevez would be left unpicked. Basically, Wilson has a lot of value. I think he's a really, good, solid player for the Rapids, even if they don't, if they can replace him next year with an upgrade. He's a good veteran player. I think he's the kind of player that could really help St. Louis, but I think at his price, he's a little expensive. He's $354,000. And I think he's a little long in the tooth. He's probably not a first-line starter. He's pretty solid. I mean, what he can do is he's a very solid defender, and he can switch the field, and he can distribute out of the back really, really well. But, if you're a really young, exciting team like St. Louis, you probably want to go out and get something foreign, and you probably want to get a mobile central defender who can cover ground, in the open field. So, and Danny Wilson isn't really either of those things. The other challenge of Danny Wilson, at least last I checked, is he occupies an international slot. So that's a challenge. The Colorado Rapids currently have 9 international slots, which is really fun. They have a lot of wheeling and dealing to do. Porrick Smith is kind of famous for pegging exactly what he thinks the number of international players he's going to need is, and then selling off all those spots for straight cash, homie. And then using the straight cash, in innovative and creative deals. He will either target a player for the super draft and then reap all the cash off the teams that weren't planning on doing the super draft, or going the other way, punting all the Rapid super draft picks, hogging all the GAM and TAM that he can possibly get, and then using it in some innovative way to make an in-team, in-league or out-of-league deal for a player. So Porik likes to cook. This is really, this is a man who worked for the FIFA Fair Play department and really understood the concept of arbitrage, right? Which is the financial theories of where are the gaps financially, which you can exploit for your best advantage. You know, rest assured, Rapids fans, he is looking at the expansion rules, the current iteration of the MLS roster rules, trying to find out the places where there are little cracks in the armor so he can scam 50,000 here and 50,000 there and then flip that into one really valuable player. In order to do that, by the way, he needs a little bit of roster flexibility. So I think he did a pretty good job here. And ultimately, there was nothing to report from the expansion draft. But of course, me and Matt always think that everything can be overthought to the nth degree.
We wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't think through that, Mark. And I'm certain that Porik Smith did the exact same. Moving on, Mark, this would have been, a week ago now today. If we're believing it, it was effectively official Sunday morning. The Colorado Rapids, Mark, officially have a shirt sponsor for the first time since Transamerica in 2018-2019 and it is UC Health, University of Colorado Health. Mark, I'm looking at a photo here of Darren Yapi, Max, and Diego Rubio with the new printing that we have on it. It is in the Rapids blue, which contrasts well with the burgundy, obviously. It's not an overbearing logo. It's not a shirt sponsor whose iron-on logo completely ruins the jersey, like that Chevy logo that was just smeared over the Man United crest and looked absolutely horrible. So feels good about that. Rabbi, you were at the press conference that you had with Porik Smith and then some representation from UC Health as well. What can you say? What does this mean in terms of, you know, the club and everything? And I know UC Health and the Rapids have had a bit of a relationship with some of the medical stuff they're doing throughout the club. What does all of this mean other than the fact that we can finally shut up about the Rapids not having a shirt sponsor? And presumably there's a little bit more money that they have to spend now from said sponsorship.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me that I was on that call. I have a sinking suspicion that maybe I was the only person on that call because nobody else asked any questions, and that's okay. I was glad to be able to take it. It was a nice conversation. It was great to see Porik in the flesh and Manny Rodriguez, who is the UC Health comms PR guy. What can I tell you? I mean, the key question that I asked is, hey, Porik, you want to tell me the financial terms of the deal? And he was like, nope. He didn't say it that way, but, yeah, I mean, they were both, so I think one of the things that, Mr. Rodriguez pointed out from UC Health was this wasn't so much a sign on the dotted line financial, you know, promotional deal, so much as this was kind of like a promotion from the lower leagues, right? This is a organization that had been in relationship with the Rapids and wanted to kind of grow and expand their relationship. I kind of liked, you know, maybe I fell hook, line, and sinker for the corporate speak, Matt, but I kind of liked it anyways, which was UC Health and the Rapids were very much identifying that they liked each other's brand a lot, right? UC Health saw that putting their brand on kids who run around on academy teams, on young, healthy people doing young, healthy, athletic things is really the kind of thing they want to promote, right? They want to promote young people moving, healthy lifestyles, the outdoor lifestyle in Colorado, and the Colorado Rapids fell into that brand perfectly for them. The Rapids with UC Health felt the same way about kind of like physical therapy and training. Clearly, you know, having a name brand Colorado large scale organization behind them felt good for Porik. and the team, and I think that they were very proud that they landed a corporate sponsor. I joked on Twitter, I hope they got their first payment, you know, kind of up front and a significant amount of money. That was a joke and a dig at the Rapids in reference to the Chow days when the Colorado Rapids made a multi-million dollar deal with a telecom company called Chow, and then only got the first $75,000 of the deal. And ultimately, by, I think, May of that year, had to remove the team, the Chow logo from the kits because they hadn't paid. And so that's a great thing about UC Health is that we don't have to worry about that. You know, I think you're going to see that name around all the time. I think you're going to see one of the things that the Rapids have been really good at when they get larger sponsors is integrating them into lots of things. You'll see them in the broadcast. You'll see them in the parking lot, at the tailgate. You'll see their logo all around the stadium, and lots of free giveaways and stuff like that. It'll be it's more or less a win-win-win. I only wish we knew how much financially it would help the Rapids on the balance sheet, but you know, that's, it's understandable that they didn't contribute that. So I thought it was a solid press conference. I don't think there's anybody in the world in Rapids land who isn't happy about this, except for maybe the folks who were hoping that it was going to be a cannabis sponsor, a local brewery, or the tree farm out on I-25. Go 5 miles west to the tree farm.
Yeah, no, all good points there, Mark. I mean, I have to believe there's no way it's not in like the ballpark of other shirt sponsors that we have. You know, let's just say, you know, if Atlanta United from, what is it? It's the home like family mortgage company that I can't remember the name of. I can picture the logo.
That's all I need. You're good enough.
So, you know, so if they're getting $1 million, Mark, like I highly doubt the Rapids are getting less than 500K. A year from UC Health. So I mean,
and the deal is through, this is important to say for those who don't know it, the deal is through 2029. So that's good. It offers a lot of stability. It's a nice long-term contract.
Yeah. So a nice long-term contract. So I believe, Mark, that has to easily be longer than, I feel like the Transamerica deal was only like 4 or 5 years at the most. So that's nice to do. And, you know, also, you know, I've heard from, you know, I heard from people up the ladder at the time that the Rapids really wanted to build like a corporate sponsor to actually have a relationship and a partnership with. And they didn't really achieve that with Transamerica. I've heard third, maybe fourth hand that ultimately Transamerica also wasn't happy with that. Relationships are two-way streets. But, you know, this is an entity that obviously immediately has brand recognition within the state of Colorado. They're both local, so there's a lot more interactions in the way that maybe Transamerica, that I think is based out somewhere in the Midwest, if you're talking where their corporate headquarters are, there's a little bit of distance there. And there's an immediate impact that you have in terms of, you know, the interacting that's affecting the first team, and it's going to have a positive influence on the community as well. You know, I don't know how much other than financial literacy help, educational services, how much Transamerica was doing to actually directly affect the Colorado Rapids boots on the ground level. But absolutely, you know, UC Health is a health resource. Rapids are trying to be strength at altitude. The Rapids have had a lot of injuries, Mark. I'm sure there's somebody over at UC Health that knows something about rehabbing ACLs that would absolutely be helpful for the Rapids come preseason. So that's all good to hear on that. One thing that I forgot in the rundown, Mark, we officially got some numbers regarding the regarding how much Apple TV Plus is going to cost, or how much the extra charge for getting all of the MLS games as opposed to some of the MLS games. Mark, I don't have the number in front of me. Was it $99 for the year? Does that sound right?
$99 for the year if you are not already signed up for Apple TV Plus. And $79 for the year if you're already signed up. And that leads to a ton of questions that a lot of us still have, which, you know, it's still a little confusing whether it's $99 or $99 after you've already signed up for Apple. But either way, you know, some people are griping, but most people are like, yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, so I think the two interesting things that I see there, Mark, is that that is a price point that I think is understandable for the hardcore fans. If I'm comparing that, I would say I believe it was $75 for the year, and I think it was $15 a month for MLS Live back in the day in like 2012, 2013. You figure, okay, that's right around the same amount, but with the inflation that we've just gotten in the last 2 years, Mark, that's certainly better bang for your buck value as well on that front. And then even if you only want some MLS games, if you don't want one for your specific team as well, you're still getting a good number of those just by having the simple Apple TV subscription, which is on par with the other subscriptions you see from Hulu, Paramount Plus, Peacock, all of the other ones that exist and everything. Where I have some issues and where I'm really curious about is to the casual soccer fan, to the you know, where there's room for growth in terms of the fan base. Sports fans in other markets, soccer fans who really like European soccer, who would be interested in MLS. I don't know. I think that price point is way too much for that, because just the, I already have Apple TV. I now want all of the MLS games. That is more expensive than the entire year of ESPN Plus is going to cost. And that's with ESPN Plus raising their prices, what, 4 or 5 months ago. That is more than Paramount Plus that you would get if you want Champions League as well. That is, so I look at that price point and say, I get that, and what do I get? Just all of the other MLS games? I'm not super interested in that. When you just look at the barrier to entry for pretty much all the other leagues and sports that you would want, really outside of if you're a cord cutter who watches the Premier League, because then, like, you need a cable subscription, and then if you don't, yeah, and then maybe the cable subscription comes with Peacock, maybe you need Peacock, you know, that's the one that's a little bit more complicated. I don't know how the casual sports fan, Mark, who, I don't know how the casual Rapids fan, who's an Arsenal fan or whatever, you know, pays for MLB TV to watch all of the out-of-market Rockies games or something like that. I don't know how someone says, oh, you mean I get the Bundesliga, I get La Liga for on ESPN Plus. I get a bunch of other stuff on ESPN Plus for $50 a year. If I want to watch Serie A, you know, another $60 a year on Paramount, I get Serie A and I get Champions League. Why would I pay $75K just to watch some of the other Rapids games?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the domestic fan, and for the domestic fan that's kind of a tweener, you know, that person who is an English Premier League fan who wants to maybe dabble in other soccer leagues but isn't sure, price is always an issue. I'm going to add something that I've really never thought of, and I pulled up the webpage for MLS Soccer in order to just double check this, and I was right. I think one of the things that's really, I haven't heard anybody really talk about it, but I do think it's really interesting. You know, you can't get an English Premier League subscription in two countries on the same service. Meaning, if you live in Mexico half the year and you live in the U.S. half the year, or if you have a friend in Mexico, you are watching English Premier League games on two completely different services. I think an interesting and not really talked about aspect of this new deal with Apple is that Apple TV is being offered in 100 countries, and the price point is probably the same roughly in every country. Meaning, if you're in Sweden and you're thinking about leagues to watch, you might be interested in signing up for MLS because the price point is fairly straightforward. It's not complicated, right? Like for me, I'm a huge fan of Israeli soccer. There's no easy or simple way to watch Israeli soccer. It's basically unpurchasable unless you want to pay through the nose. I believe it's like $40 a month to watch Israeli soccer in America, which is just ridiculous for a mediocre league. But the fact that you've got a fairly reasonable price to watch some fairly good soccer players, I mean, add to that the fact that Gareth Bale is going to be in the league next year. You've got a couple other players. And of course, there is the rumor again that Lionel Messi is probably interested in coming to Inter Miami. I mean, that's really going to drive a lot of interest abroad. And so that's pretty good. I think the other thing that we're all kind of holding our breath on is the production values of the pregame and postgame show. You know, we've always been treated like, orphan stepchildren compared to like these fancy Sunday morning NFL wraparound shows that you can watch and you can sit on your couch all day long ordering pizza from the local pizza place and binging Throwball. And MLS has always been, well, you could do that, but you'd have to have three different packages, change the channel multiple times, and you probably don't have a very good commentary show to sit through to kind of prep you on all that stuff. Those are some aspects of this deal that I really like. Of course, the last thing we're kind of waiting on, that we will be waiting on for the next month or two, is who they've signed up to be the commentary team, who they've signed up to be the pregame and postgame show folks. And the last piece of news that dropped today, which I don't think was a surprise because he kind of already hinted that, was that Richard Fleming officially confirmed that MLS has not engaged him for the next coming year. So he will be doing something else next year. We wish Richard well professionally in his next iteration. I have no doubts that the man will find something really meaningful. I think for us Rapids fans, we're all nervous to think about who's going to sit in the booth and call our games. The plan from Apple was that they're going to rotate their broadcast teams. They're going to mix and match 12 different teams, and then they're going to rotate those people around the league. So we may hear some familiar voices that we Rapids fans have heard calling opposing games for the last years, or working for Fox, or working for ESPN. We may hear some new voices. Some of those might be great and really fun to listen to. Some may be babes in the woods saying moronic things that really frustrate me and Matt, because we're like, Dumkov, we already knew that, or that's actually not correct. But we'll bear with it, and hopefully, you know, things will suss themselves out, and we'll end up with a pretty good service with Apple. You know, I think for the folks who, last thing I'll say, is I think for the folks who listen to this show, I am confident that Apple will be an upgrade over what we've had in the past overall, and that you are probably going to pay for the full thing. I think the question that Matt is really asking is this going to grow the league? And I have faith that over time, the league will continue to very slowly grow. Because remember, Matt, in addition to this, the people who don't pay for Apple TV are going to get a few free games a year. And maybe they'll click the button and give it a try. You know, it should be a good thing.
Yeah, just one thing that I want to point out, Mark. I do know I've heard from a couple of season ticket holders that prices generally post-pandemic, so we'll say 2021 to this year to next year, season tickets have increased a little bit. How much of that is inflation? How much of that is just generally the fact that season tickets rarely go down in cost, I think is a good question. But I know there's been one question that's come that came out of this when we initially heard that season ticket holders would have this comped already. And I think there's a question of would teams effectively be baking that into the price? You know, were the Rapids already going to raise season ticket prices on average by about $100 so that effectively you were paying for this, even though it's, oh, I renew my season tickets and then I get Apple TV Plus and all the MLS stuff for free? I think it's a valid question. I know prices have gone up a little bit, and so I'm wondering if that was included in the calculus when the Rapids sent that information out, you know, a couple months ago, whenever it was time for renewal. But what do I know? Mark, let's come on to the last thing we've officially found out. Rabbi, I don't know how I've done this, but somehow in the matter of like 6 months, I've beaten Tom Boger to two scoops that are Rapids-related and Rapids-related in Europe, so I don't know.
Well done, sir.
I don't know about that. Tom's great. I like Tom. He's a good person. But so, Mark, in any case, we found out Cole Bassett has officially been recalled from his loan to Fortuna Sittard. As I reported originally, there were a couple of stipulations in the loan there upon which the Rapids could terminate the loan early and then bring him back to the Rapids. Those were believed to be some combination of minutes played, games started, games played, and there might have also been a goal contributions in there. Cole Mark, I think, played, 286 minutes? I think he started a total of three games, one of which was a cup game. That's where he got his only goal or his only goal contribution for Fortuna, and it didn't really work out. I spoke with him earlier today at halftime at the DNVR bar during the Wales-USMNT game. I think overall he was disappointed, Mark. I think obviously he gets brought in. You know, he has 2-3 days training. The next game happens. He's not yet in the lineup. Fortuna loses that game. That's their third loss in a row. And then the manager who really wanted him is sacked, and the new manager comes in and doesn't really want him. I think there's more going on there in terms of why that ended up not working out. That's soccer. Sometimes it happens. I think Cole tried to find a way to be level-headed and professional about it. And, you know, ultimately there were lessons learned in that. And I think he's a better person, and I think he'll be a better professional having gone through his little, you know, Dutch, you know, year abroad. He was a more fit, sharper player when he played in the Thanksgiving game last year than he is, I think, right now, or he was at the end of the season, last European season with Feyenoord. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have experiences that I think make him a little bit better, a little bit more experience as well, better tactical understanding, and if nothing else, you know, a better idea of what it takes to find success in Europe that will serve him if and when the next opportunity comes up. You know, I think he kind of alluded to, Mark, that there might be some that he'd be open to going back to Europe. I think if he's back with Colorado, I think he'd be fully committed. Obviously, he loves the club. He's a homegrown and everything. But, you know, I think if there were similar interest and it was a better, softer landing place, I think Feyenoord initially was a good idea. It didn't really work out. As I mentioned earlier, Fortuna seemed like a really good opportunity, and then 4 days in, it ended up being not a very good opportunity that in hindsight was really a waste of 4 or 5 months of his career and everything. But I'll have some more stuff out on there on Burgundy Wave. We are not playing the audio from you for from that interview on the podcast here, folks, because there was just way too much background noise at halftime, and there's no way for me to edit it and make it sound remotely good or understandable from Cole specifically. But Rabbi, your thoughts on this move? What does it mean for Cole? What could Cole bring to a midfield that desperately needed composure on the ball and quality last year?
Great questions. I guess my most important take about Cole Bassett is we really don't know what this is going to do to the young man. Some people come back from Europe having not had a successful experience chastened and feeling like, wow, that was a lot of energy expended for nothing. And they come back and they kind of like fade away. And that's kind of the beginning of the death knell of their career. And then there's the Landon Donovan, right? Landon went off to Everton. It went okay. It didn't come off great. And he came right back to the United States and he did great things. You know, he went right back to being one of the best players, in the world in Major League Soccer. He used it as fuel and as fire. It's not a one-to-one situation, but you know, like, Matt Miazga is a good example of what could happen to Cole Bassett, which is he went off to Europe and he kind of never really made the mark, and he fell off of the USMNT kind of train, and that was kind of the end of you know, his high water mark was being sold to Europe. So there are really big questions about what Cole Bassett is going to do next year with this. I do definitely think that Feyenoord is only holding on to him in name only. I don't think there's any expectation that at the end of his one more year of being loaned, that Feyenoord is eventually going to hang on to him. I think he's basically back with the Colorado Rapids for the duration. And I hope that he progresses. You know, I feel like his progress was likely flat for the last year. He didn't likely learn any new tricks because of how unstable his loan time was or how little time he got with the senior team in Feyenoord. That means he comes back to the Rapids without a whole lot of progress in hand. He's got a lot of work ahead of him, and I think that his desire is a big question to that. You know, the biggest challenge with Cole Bassett is he has a couple of dimensions as a number 8 or a number 10, but he's missing a few of the pieces to be a fully rounded out player. You know, the ability to kind of like go both ways and defend. You know, his really accurate passing has always been like a step behind other elite players, but I think his kind of dribbling and mobility, his ability to appear in the box as a kind of a late arriving striker type option has always been top notch. So he's got a few tricks and skills still to pick up. And that's going to be the determination of whether he is a critical top notch player for the Colorado Rapids next year, or whether he's just a guy we brought back on loan and feel obligated to slot into the roster. So it's a lot of questions there. I'm really a little nervous about it, but hopeful, I guess.
I mean, if nothing else, Mark, I think he brings a lot of quality and I think mobility that the midfield was desperately needing. You know, if you're talking about...
He's an upgrade on Max. That's like the most important thing. But Max wasn't starting, so that's a problem.
Yeah, okay. But Mark, if I told you right now, let's keep it simple. Rapids re-sign Jossie Zardes, and the plan for the three-man midfield is Rubio at the 10, Bassett at the 8, and Price at the 6. And then I don't want to make a decision about Felipe Gutierrez yet, but let's say it's Ollie Larraz and Prizo as the first two guys off the bench. Like, is that not an immediate upgrade over the state of the midfield that we had March of this year?
And then Brian Acosta is just gone altogether, or he's off the bench, deep on the bench.
Oh, that's a good question. So I guess if we're talking about, because those are, if I'm talking about the starters, those are three different players that all do different specific things. So let's say our second line would be Prizo, Larraz, Acosta. And so then who you're subbing on and who you're subbing off is probably dependent on the situation and the player. But then, like, if we're talking about those, that's a six-man deep, a two-deep roster in terms of the midfield, Mark. That has to be way better than where we were, you know, at times this season.
It's pretty good. I mean, I think, you know, with Bassett, there's some question for me about whether the Rapids are best in a 4-3-3 with him kind of at that eight position, or whether they don't need to monkey around. I've been doing player reviews. I'm on to defensive midfielders right now. I'm going very slowly because there's a lot of things to think about. And also, there's a lot of other good soccer on to watch. But I think one of the things that I've been thinking about is early in the season, the Rapids, because they had lost Kellen Acosta, they didn't have a lot of really good midfield options. And so effectively, they went to something like a 4-4-2 or a 3-4-3. In which there were only two central midfielders. And they did that because they didn't have three central midfielders. And I kind of wonder whether the Rapids wouldn't look better with Cole Bassett learning how to become a wide midfielder. I think that might be fun, like a kind of a ball control-y, a slower-footed, a wide attacker might be an option for the Rapids. So, I don't know. I think we're still trying to figure out how best to win soccer games with Cole Bassett on the field.
Last thing that we have to talk about, Mark, is the England game, looking ahead to that. Rabbi, what do we see in this match? I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I have to think Gio Reyna has some involvement, regardless of the quotes that came out from him and Triple G in the aftermath of the game against Wales, a match that we think, you know, matches up a little bit better in terms of what the U.S. tries to do well. Effectively a free hit if we're talking about just trying to finish second in the group. What do we see in Black Friday, Mark, and what I think will probably be the most watched U.S. soccer game in the history of the U.S. soccer being on TV?
Oh, yeah, I'm literally having a party at my house and inviting a whole bunch of people over, most of whom know nothing about soccer. I mean, this England team gave Iran an absolute drubbing, but after the first goal, Iran just looked really shaky all around. They just did not look composed, controlled. They fell back really far. They kind of like invited England forward, ceded possession. It was scary to look at. Then you have Raheem Sterling, like, banging it in, at will. You had Jude Bellingham, he got the first goal. This was his coming out party for most of us in the soccering world who don't watch Borussia Dortmund. Bakayo Saka looked just as spectacular as he has been for the last year and a half with Arsenal. It was kind of terrifying to watch England clicking on all cylinders, and on some level you have to ask yourself, like, well, is that them just drubbing a poor opponent, or are they really that good? And I do think for a lot of folks who watched the last Euros and have watched the growth and evolution of this England team, I think a lot of us are thinking, like, this is a legit semi-final contender. Some people probably would even go so far as to say this is a finals contender. So for the U.S., if you could slow them down, if you can muck them up, if you could strike on the counter, if you could do what the U.S. used to do really, really well back in the early days of its team in 94, 98, in 2006, where we were the faster, the more physical team, the craftier team. We ceded possession and strike on the counter, you know, kind of like lop it, you know, like loft it over the top, run onto it, you know, like that might be the way to go at it. Route one soccer, bunker and counter, old school. Grind it out and try and get yourself a 1-1 or a 2-2 draw, and then you're probably through to the next round. I do not think you should go toe-to-toe with England. I think a lot of American fans would disagree with me on that. I think a lot of folks would say, no, we're just as good as them. We can match up, but I don't think we've been as good as them in the last 6 months, and I don't think we should try to be. But to your point, Matt, there's a little bit of strategery going into these final two games. You don't have to beat England. If you draw them, you're in great shape to get out of the group. If you lose by only a goal, you're probably in okay shape potentially coming out of the group, because I think Wales, England is like the smart money is on England drubbing them, or at least beating them by a goal. And then it comes down to goal differential, right? And it means the U.S. goes into a game against Iran needing to beat the living snot out of them and just take all the goals off them. That's the way I'd go. Play for a draw against England and then expect to score four, win 4-0 against Iran. Matt, what are your thoughts? Who are the players to worry about? What are the tactics the U.S. should employ? Do you agree with anything I said, or am I just blowing hot air?
You're in the right ballpark. I'm worried about Bukayo Saka. Obviously, Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane, obviously, because Kane didn't get a goal, and I think he's probably looking at it thinking this is a really good chance for him to win the Golden Boot at the World Cup. So I'm worried about them in terms of key players for the United States. I think I'm curious to see how Berhalter lines up the midfield, because do you start Brandon Aaronson because he's the most mobile and he's going to be the best guy in terms of pressing England? What does that mean given Weston McKennie? He's not going to play all three of these games, you know, more than 65 minutes averaged. So he's not going to play 190 minutes across those three games. So I'm curious about that. Do we see Gio Reyna? Is Gio Reyna on the bench? Is he the first sub in the second half? Does he start and then just not play 90 minutes? And, you know, I think Sargent did some really good stuff despite the lack of service that ultimately ended up getting to him, because so many of Pulisic's crosses, didn't make it past the near post and everything. So I don't know that it warrants, I don't know that he warrants being dropped. And also, I think him compared to the other forwards on this team, he's the best presser of them. So I almost think the you go defensive of let's put in Aaronson, let's put in Josh Sargent, let's try to press the crap out of them, try and do things in transition. But fundamentally, most important thing, let's just get to halftime 0-0, and then we could bring on Gio Reyna, Luca De La Torre. If it's Aaronson in the midfield and Musa's out, you could bring in Musa. Potentially Weah would be available off the bench to then really try and go for it in transition. And the longer this game goes 0-0, the more the pressure ratchets up on England. So I think it's interesting, but in terms of who I think the key players are, for me, I need to see what that lineup looks like, just because I have so many questions about that, especially with what's come out post-game between him and Reyna. I predicted a 1-1 draw earlier on Last Word SC Radio, which you can find on your podcatcher of choice, so I guess I have to stick with that, Mark, but I'm not super optimistic on my pick. Last thing that I want to say here, Rabbi, did you see the tweet from LAFC at 1:43 p.m. today? They have a picture of Gareth Bale in an LAFC kit with a Wales flag, and it looks like a Welsh castle behind him, and they tweeted Bale in all caps with a bunch of A's.
Wow. Way to go anti-American.
I'm just gonna say this, Mark. I think I can't recall a scenario where when the LA Galaxy had either of the Dos Santos brothers and they did something with Mexico against the United States and them tweeting in celebration of that. If that's not cringy and warranting them removing LAFC as MLS Cup champions, I don't know what is, but also they're getting roasted in the comments. So RIP to that admin and their mental health, I suppose.
To your point, Matt, just to fact check, you asked the question about Sterling versus Rashford. Rashford came on, scored a goal, and I do think, you know, I think they're both fantastic wide players. I think any one of Saka, Rashford, Grealish, or Sterling could start the next match. I also think that they could rotate once they get a result on Friday that they like, that either assures them to go through or puts them in a very good position to go through. Against Wales, they may rotate the squad a little bit to keep folks fresh and healthy. So we may see both Sterling and Rashford get starts in this group stage. So you never know. But yeah, I do think your points about Gio Reyna, that's the real talk that everybody is busting out on the Twitter machine. You know, that Gio Reyna should have been brought on instead of Jordan Morris. You know, as an MLS stan myself, I really like Jordan Morris. I think he brings speed and verticality. I think he dives through the back line in a very different way than Gio Reyna does. I don't necessarily think it was a better decision to bring on Morris. I just thought it was a different decision. It brings a different dynamic. And all the players on this team belong there. They all can do really good things. And I think to your point before, you know, the one player that we kind of need a little bit more precision, a little bit more quality, a little bit more carefulness is Christian Pulisic. But for those of us who are fans and have been watching the USMNT for the last 6-8 months, watching Christian Pulisic not quite be as good as we'd hoped he'd be is something that we all have witnessed a lot of. So, you know, we hope he pulls it together. I don't think he's getting dropped from the team sheet, but I definitely think as goes Christian Pulisic, so goes the USMNT in this final game, or in the next, sorry, in the second game. In the final game too, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Folks, we are sponsored by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scars. Icarus has some nice stuff on offer for this World Cup. There are some great kits out there that they will they have on order. You can also make your own kit with Icarus FC. They have all sorts of color styles and all sorts of color combinations, plus different graphics that you can choose. And Roughneck Scars does some great stuff with the custom neckwear. Their stuff is really warm and really great. It's time of year when you probably want a scarf. The last 3 days in Pittsburgh, it has been between 20 and 30 degrees. I saw that in Colorado, Matt, it got down all the way to a low of 10 a few days ago. You guys are grinding it out in the cold. You know what make you feel better? A scarf. So head on over to Roughneck Scarves and take care of it. Matt, tell them how to hit us on the socials, on the email, how to read our written comment and our written content, including my new article, which should drop later this week on reviewing the positions for the Colorado Rapids at defensive midfield, and how to reach us on Twitter.
Yeah, listeners, follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. Check out all of our written content collectively at Pittsburgh Soccer Now, Last Word on Sports, The Burgundy Wave, and our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Go there, and you can also pay to become a subscribing Highliner to support financially what we do here at HTHL. $5 a month or $42 for the year. Mark, we're officially rolling over. Buying a subscription now gets it to you for 2023, right?
It does. That's true.
Okay. And then also send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, or if you want to get to us via email, rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Mark, when I was at the DNVR bar, I had 3 different listeners come up to recognize me, who wanted to say hello, who were very gracious, and it was wonderful getting to visit with them, including I finally got to meet the Rapids Foreign Legion family. So wonderful soccer moments and friendships and communities, despite the 2 points dropped for the Yanks today. Listeners, not sure when we'll see you next, because obviously, other than saying yay to Kellen Acosta, former Colorado Rep, and I'm not sure how much else there's going on World Cup related that's relevant to us. But if something big happens with Lucas Estevez on December 1st, or if there's any other big offseason action between now and, I'll say, a week before Christmas, we'll see you then. And we might also have some other evergreen, wholesome content that's coming to you that, if it does happen, you'll get it in short order. But we'll see you the next time that we see you.
Peace.